This is episode 36 of the Great Speech Podcast on What is Emotional Intelligence? An interview with Monique Russell.
No, it's not something that you can just have overnight. It's a constant evolution. And that's why when I hear people say, well, give me two tips to be emotionally intelligent, I'm like, man, good luck. Good luck, because that's just like ticking off the box.
It's a Great Speech Podcast. For the public speakers, we're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics from the bottom to the top, so get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up, listen up, listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. Welcome back. Welcome back, my great communicators. How you guys doing? I hope you are well. I am, of course, Kolarele Shonaike, your communication super skills coach, bringing you another episode in my kind of series of episodes dedicated to the search for an answer to the question of how can we be better communicators? Because I firmly believe that great communication is the key to everything that we want in this world. And really, when I started this podcast, I did so really without any particularly grand designs. It was just, I love the subject and I wanted to start talking about it. And in particular, to start talking to other people that I could learn from. And the topic this week, which is on emotional intelligence, is one that I confess that I'm not an expert in at all. It's a subject that I kind of know about, but I haven't in my own right studied it to say, okay, really, what do we mean by emotional intelligence? How do we build it? What is the value and what's the benefit of it? Which is why I thought I better call in an expert. And the expert I have this week is a lady by the name of Monique Russell, who is an awesome communications expert in her own right. She works with women leaders and teams on how to develop positive and productive relationships at home and at work. I think men and women, actually, she corrected me on. But she's particularly passionate about serving Black and women employee resource groups. She's worked with organizations like Amazon and Microsoft and the Center for Disease Control and Atlanta International Airport, really helping them develop and foster connection, community, creativity, and courage is how she describes it. So she's got 20 years experience in the field. She has her own book called The Ultimate Speaker's Guide, and also another book, which I actually didn't really know about. I knew it was there, but I hadn't found the time, unfortunately, to read it. As you know, I like to do my research, and part of that means I will buy the book of my guest and read it, so I kind of really know where they're coming from. So she's got a great book called Intentional Motherhood, Who Said It Would Be Easy? And I've since bought the book since we did the actual interview itself. And I wanted to actually read you just a tiny snippet of the opening dedication for the book. So Monique writes here, she goes, I am writing this book because I want mothers everywhere to know that you are not your past, you are not your culture, you are not your childhood, you are not your job, your title, or your status. You are not your heritage. You are who you intentionally choose to be. And the book is called Intentional Motherhood, right? I found that just an amazingly poignant opening. And when I interviewed Monique, it's one of those where, you know, I've interviewed quite a lot of people on this podcast now, which is really, really great. And I have to say that she is right up there in terms of one of the guests that I just felt the passion and knowledge for her subject really, really shine through. So in this episode, we discuss all things emotional intelligence, and you will hear my clumsy questions because I know so little about this area that I'm asking in things in the wrong way, and Monique corrects me through the interview, which I like. You know, I like that with my guests, right? So we discuss things like, you know, why she doesn't do the 5 tips to better emotional intelligence kind of thing. We talk about she explains how to really approach relationship management and what to do to improve your procrastination, if that's one of the things that you kind of suffer with and struggle with. You know, I ask her, where do we start, right? I know so little about this. I'm okay. Well, look, where do we start if we're thinking about emotional intelligence? So she just gives a really, really clear answer to it. I loved how she broke emotional intelligence down into what she called 4 quadrants, that really helped us to look at it in a much more holistic way than I would certainly have thought about. And it means that we can, in the conversation, we can really explore a lot of areas because it's such a wide and broad field that, you know, we really could have gone on for hours. So we talk about, you know, what are the challenges in particular that women leaders face. We discuss imposter syndrome and how trying to fight imposter syndrome, which I'll be honest is in a way the way I had thought about imposter syndrome, and that, okay, you've really got to try and fight it and overcome it and defeat it, as it were. And she explains how that's all wrong. That's really not the way to approach it at all. And, you know, she really, she talks about, you know, I asked her, you know, what does life look like if you don't have emotional intelligence? What does life look like if you do have it? And again, clumsy question, but she really gives a deep, thoughtful, considered answer that just made absolute sense. As I say, it really is one of the episodes where I would say I learnt the most, one of the most, where I was really just taking it in and listening. And then I've listened back to it myself and really am getting so much out of it. So I really hope you guys enjoy it as well. I think it is an interview that you will come back to many times just to kind of drink it all in, right? And learn and listen from all the things that Monique has to share with us. She has her own podcast as well, the Bridge to You podcast, which I've listened to, which is also great. She covers this kind of stuff. So really, really worthwhile listening to in this episode. If you want to know more about Monique, of course, just scroll down on the show notes. You'll see the link to her LinkedIn profile, her website, her book, so that you can kind of catch up with her as she encourages you to do. Of course, if you want to help this podcast out, you really, really must make sure you subscribe to it and kind of click the bell for notifications, and tell other people about it, because that's how it gets found more often. And of course, if you want more help with communication skills from me, I have a great free workshop at greatspeech.co/workshop, which is all about the 5 communication skills that will change your career if you use them and stall your career if you don't. So yeah, this is one of the episodes that is just packed with value. Really very grateful to Monique for coming on, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So without further ado, here's Monique. Okay, my great communicators, I'm glad to say I have got Monique indeed with me. Monique, how are you doing?
Fantastic, Kola. I'm so happy to be on this show.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. I'm really pleased to be on this show, especially because I asked you quite a while ago. I'm going to call you out. I asked you quite a while ago. She was a little bit like, I don't know. But I'm really pleased to have you on. Where are you at the moment? Because I know I met you in Atlanta, but I don't know if you were back in the Bahamas or.
No, that's exact. That's where I live. Yeah, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, cool. And how are things there? Opened up, still locked down?
Oh, we've been opened up for quite a long time. You know, our governor was one of the first that kind of just went ahead and did whatever he wanted. And so we've been opened up for a while. I mean, there's definitely places that are still closed and then restaurants that are only takeout only. But for the most part, you can get things done.
Okay, that's cool. Well, I'm looking forward to get back to Atlanta because I do go there quite often. But in the meantime, when I have a guest, I always like to start my episodes with a quote, and I get that privilege goes to the guest. So tell us what your quote is, who it's by, and why it's important to you.
Well, the quote is, "It takes a village to raise a child." And who it's by, it's an African proverb. And why it's important to me is because it really does take a village. I mean, you know, we are built for community. We're built for connection. And not just as children, even as we get into adults, we still need that community. We need that tribe. We need that sense of belonging. And for me, just growing up throughout my childhood and my early life experiences, if I didn't have that tribe or community, I wouldn't elevate. So we're raising children, but as adults now, we're still elevating with the tribe and the village, if you will.
Love that quote. Although, how did you feel when you saw Hillary Clinton, I don't want to say appropriate it, but she kind of used it as though it was her own in a way. And I would hear people saying, oh, the Hillary Clinton quote. I'm like, nah, it's not.
No, it's not a Hillary Clinton quote. But it's funny that you say that, because I remember in 2012, I did a training workshop for the National Head Start Association stakeholders. This was in Virginia Beach. And I actually used Hillary's verbiage in addition to understanding where it originally came from. So my thing is, you know what? The main goal is to get the message across that we're not islands, and we're not to be made to stand alone. We're pretty much in community. We're pretty much in tribe. It is our village, and it is the African global village that started the proverb. So
yeah, exactly. To be honest, I think that's the right approach. And I love proverbs generally. And to be honest, if they provide wisdom, insight to people, wherever it comes from or whoever claims to have owned it, it doesn't really matter. It's the insight that matters. Mm-hmm. Tell me, Emily, one of the things that I've kind of read some of your stuff, watched your stuff, listened to your podcast kind of in preparation for this. And one of the things that I love about the way you approach things is you're very open about how much you are on a mission. Like I read, or I think heard you saying, that I was born to empower and inspire other people. So a lot of people aren't willing to say that, right? Mm-hmm. But you are. Why? How come?
You read that about me?
Yeah.
So that's what I feel. I feel so connected to my role and my purpose. I've done so much work and continue to do work on myself through evolving in the aspect of self-awareness. And when you get to that place where you understand even the most difficult and traumatic experiences that you had in your life have all been connected to why you're here. I think Miles Monroe said it best. You know, we ask ourselves the question, you know, why are we here? What are we supposed to do? Where are we going? These are questions that we constantly ask ourselves. So for me, I feel like communications was my gift. It is my gift. And I'm naturally good at inspiring. I'm naturally good at supporting others and helping them to achieve their goals, seeing them win. It just really gets me excited. And when I was younger, I didn't realize that that was part of my gifting. So when people would say things like, oh, you're trying to suck up to the teacher. Oh, you're trying to, I wasn't trying to suck up to anybody. It was just me being me. And so after hearing that for some time, I tried to dumb it down. I tried to please people and, you know, try to be tough. I remember telling my mom one time, I was like, man, I just want to be more tough. I want to be tough and don't care about people, you know? And so you come to this realization that you are who you are, and I am who I am. And the gift that I have is the gift that I have. And it's given to me to empower and inspire. That's what I was born for. And I enjoy doing it. So yes, I'm not afraid to say this is my mission. And my mission is to help women leaders. It's to help teams. It's to help individuals have positive and productive relationships at home and at work.
Hmm. I saw, as I said, I was looking into that, there was a part where you wrote, I think in a bio or something, that you went through a period where you lost your confidence, but you didn't really expand on it. So I didn't know what that was. So I'm gonna see if I can tease it out of you and see whether you can kind of give us a bit more about what that was about.
Sure. And I'm happy to talk about it. You know that, Kola. So the thing is with confidence building, so funny because this is what I teach on. So most of the things that I teach, coach, and train on are things that I not only have understanding of theoretically from the academic perspective, but also personally. So I'm teaching out of my lived experiences and my lived growth. So when I talk about confidence and even my journey of losing the confidence, when I left the beautiful islands of the Bahamas where I was raised and I came to the US, I was the confidence queen. Like literally, like you couldn't talk to me, Kola. You couldn't tell me I wasn't the thing, okay? And so I could win any Miss Confidence contest you put in front of me. But through that journey of life, I had my first child at 18, and then I was continuing my school education. I ended up getting married, having another child. And then through that whole process of the life evolution, it wasn't as though something hit inside me and say, okay, beep, 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 beep. You lost your confidence. You lost your confidence. It just doesn't happen that way. When you lose confidence, it's like a slow cooker. But when you get there, you'll know, you know, it's not something that happens overnight. So my desire when I first started was this big broadcast international journalist. That was what I was supposed to do. That's what was my role. And when I left college and I applied for, like, I don't know, 100 jobs or so in the field, I was very disappointed because, first of all, after going through all those years of study and all those student loans, I didn't land an opportunity in the field that I chose to study. And the opportunities that I did get, they were like, I mean, come on, I might as well not have gone to college because what they were offering was like $20,000, $25,000 a year. And I mean, really? With degrees? No, that wasn't my plan. So anyway, I started in executive support. I was working in a corporate environment. And then over the years, I just realized that, you know what, the spunk and the spark that I originally had, it waned. It wasn't in that same place. You know, I stayed home for a period of time with my youngest son. And then after that, I was like, no, this is not for me. Like my motherhood identity, and I write about this in my book, actually, my motherhood identity was also connected to my professional ambition and my professional aspiration. So not being able to contribute in that way impacted how I felt, impacted my confidence, because we want to be able to contribute and we want to be able to feel relevant, right? And when I moved to Atlanta, I connected with a women's group called WATS, Women Aspiring Together to Succeed. And it was through that connection, let's talk about the village, the proverb, it takes a village, right? It was through that group that I was exposed to vision boarding. Always set goals, always know how to accomplish them, but vision boarding as a way of setting goals, the tapping into the imagination and the creativity and all that stuff. And it was shortly after I started that first vision board that I started my lock journey, like when I started growing my dreadlocks. Okay. Yeah. So I say through that process of discovery and awakening, connecting with the women's organization, I came to that realization, and also through some bad business transactions, okay? I came to the realization that I was not living with the confidence that I desired to live with. And so that's when I said that was a period of my life where I lost my confidence. And I knew excuse me, what I needed to do to get it back. And it started with that visioning process, that imagination process, that goal setting from a new angle, not just the technical, logical, let's write down 1, 2, 3, but truly tapping into desire. And then I started investing in coaches and I started investing in therapy and I started to know more and more about myself. I became a student of myself, which is pretty much part of the process and the tools, mental tools that I use to help women do the same thing because I know what it feels like.
Yeah. So do you think that you were naturally empathetic or do you think going through that is what kind of really set you on the road to having that empathy?
Both. Everybody's born with elements of empathy. And it's just a matter of your environment, being in the environment for you to be exposed to strengthening it and having it grow. You can be in an environment where whatever little empathy you have, it is stifled and you become hardened or you put this shell around yourself and you protect yourself. And then you can be in an environment where, you know, it's like, oh my God, like this is so amazing. So both, I have it, I had it naturally, but then it was also developed because of the environments that I was exposed to. And of course, the process that I went through, but I don't just leave it to the point of going through a difficult time or a process because hundreds of people go through difficult times and processes right. And they're still yeah. not able to put themselves in another person's shoes. So it is that experience of having the empathy, that village, having that tribe, that community really pour into you from that place of empathy. Now you've been receiving it and you can now give it back.
Good. Okay. Yeah. So what's interesting actually is, in fact, I just came off this afternoon doing a live show where I did a bit of an analysis of the Oprah, Harry and Meghan interview. And a big part of what I was saying was, because I was focusing just on Oprah's kind of communication skills. I didn't want to get into the into the drama of the topic itself. But one of the things in particular about Oprah is her ability to empathize. And that way she gets a lot of information out of people where the kind of the combative journalists often don't. But I wondered if you had any perspective on that whole interview, either, you know, the substance of it, not too much, or kind of how Oprah managed that whole situation.
Well, I haven't watched it. So, I haven't watched it and I have heard a lot about it and I will jump in and say, you know, Oprah is one of the models of interviewing excellence. And I feel as though part of her approach to being so successful is that she focuses on her audience always. Always, yeah. always, always. And so with her focusing on her audience, being able to be in that space of asking the questions the audience would want to hear. So there's two audiences going on, that interviewer and then the listener, you know, just managing both of those with her own curiosity. I wrote about this and I said, you know, when people ask me about podcast interviewing and how do they not sound crazy or how do they how do they what if the guest says something awkward and I don't know right. what to do or my facial expression is crazy and I say you're thinking too much about yourself. You have yeah. to think about your audience. So when it comes to Oprah and her finesse, hands down, I feel like her ability to focus on the audience, her ability to focus on the person, affirm the guest, right? And stay in that space mm-hmm. of curiosity. Like, okay, it sounded like you said this. Did you mean this or did you mean that? You know, just like really peeling in, not a long epilogue of, oh, I'm so glad that you said that because when I was a child, this is what happened to yeah. me. And very short, powerful curious questions is her approach. And she's able to do that because, like you, Kola, she prepares. She doesn't wing it. So yeah. Her preparation helps her to deliver just flawlessly.
Now, you know, so before I get into kind of the main thing I really wanted to get from you, just because we're on the subject of strong Black women, you shared a stage with Lisa Nichols, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? What was that experience like?
It was great. It was something that I was looking forward to. Let me tell you, so I grew up in the Bahamas and I spoke in the Bahamas where I grew up. Mm-hmm. I have spoken in many, many places, received lots of great feedback. You know, those things are great, but it's also different when you will go back to the place that raised you, when you go back to your hometown and you're able to pour into people in your community. It's almost like that level of trepidation is at an all-time high because these people may know you. So for me, that experience was magical. It's one that I have in my memory books all the time. I will reference that as one of the highlights of my life, being able to go ahead and give back in that way. And then sharing the stage with Lisa was just the icing on the cake. We actually not only shared the stage, but we shared the apartment together for 4 days. It was a good time. We did a few press conferences together. I loved being able to watch her in her craft. And if I could do it again, I would do it again because I think she is incredible in the way she delivers her message, the way she connects with her audience. I mean, she is an expert. So just being able to open that event was fabulous, and being behind the scenes and, you know, on the island and seeing the behind the scenes preparation, going to the press conference together. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I hadn't seen any footage of that, so I couldn't really kind of watch it, but I'm sure it was great. But okay, so let's move on, right? Because actually, recently, I was on I was being interviewed myself, and somebody asked me, so how would you define emotional intelligence? And my answer actually was, well, I'll tell you what I think, but I'm actually about to interview an expert, so I may come back to you with a totally different explanation. So let's start just with what is emotional intelligence, or how would you define it for somebody who kind of knows that they need to improve on it?
Well, big, big question there. So we could go two ways. So we could use the four quadrants of self-awareness, self-management, relationship management, and social skills. Travis Bradbury uses these four quadrants. And we can take also another approach, which is when you look at those four quadrants, to me, they are the combination of sociology, psychology, public speaking, and interpersonal. I mean,
Give me the four again.
Which one?
The four. You gave the four quadrants. So just give me each of the four again.
Self-awareness, right. Like how we get along with ourselves. Self-management, right? Mm-hmm. Relationship management.
Uh-huh.
And social skills.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So even if we take those four and we siphon them off into two buckets, it would be the interpersonal, which is the relationship management and social skills. That's like how we're dealing with the external, anything external to us, other people. Mm-hmm. And then intra, like internal, intrapersonal, which is the self-awareness and the self-management, everything that deals with the internal within ourselves. So we could put it in the two categories. It's really just interpersonal and intrapersonal communication skills.
Okay. I feel like if you were doing this in person, you would have a nice graph or something that helps me visualize it well. Okay. So those are the four categories or quadrants and the two buckets. So yeah. So tell me more, because I'm a total initiate in this. So tell me more.
No, I mean, so, okay, so let's take that first bucket of intra, intrapersonal communication. That's how we get along with ourselves. That is our self-awareness. That is the self-management bucket, or the two quadrants there. In that self-awareness, it's almost like you're just becoming a student of yourself. You have to know everything about yourself in terms of, like, you know, the time you thrive when you are working, your peak performance time, you know, your sleep time, your resting time, how the beliefs that you have, how are they formed? Are you aware of that? I'm actually doing a small group right now, a small meditation group right now. And some of the things that are coming up, it involves reflecting on the relationships that you had with your parents and some of their strengths and some of them, their limitations, and then looking at your own areas and seeing where the similarities were. So understanding how your beliefs have been formed and understanding how you live out those beliefs day to day. It's not easy. I'm going to tell you, it's not easy, especially to do on your own, because so many of these things are in the subconscious, subconscious sometimes. But it's really, take, if you were to imagine it, you become Inspector Gadget, and you are Inspector Gadget, and you're looking to find everything possible about yourself from beginning to end. And so with that self-awareness, when it comes to the emotions, you're going to be exploring and understanding what environments or situations bring different emotions for you. How do you normally respond? How is anger? How is sadness? Like, what were you exposed to? What love? What about love? Like, who taught you how to love yourself? Like, what did that look like for you? Even decision making. So I work with a lady, and one of the challenges around decision making in the corporate workspace is that, okay, these are my superiors. They are authority figures. Well, even though they are your superiors, doesn't mean that you can't speak up or you can't challenge them. But when we look at that self-awareness, like, where did that belief come from? It didn't just drop out of thin air. It came from somewhere, right? So understanding how your beliefs have been formed and how you live those out in your day-to-day, even if you're parenting, talk about that as well, like how you're parenting, like the beliefs in parenting, the beliefs in relationships, the beliefs in your business, the beliefs in your corporate or your professional career, just really being curious, using the tools of curiosity, like you're interviewing yourself to learn more about yourself. And then in that self-management aspect, it's like, all right, it's all about self-control. It's all about being gentle with yourself internally. A lot of times we have a lot of criticism towards ourselves, or we are afraid to take certain actions or steps, or we say, you know what, that's not good enough, or we have these perfectionism tendencies, or someone might trigger something for you. Have you ever had a situation where, you know, there may have been a small verbal exchange and everybody else around you feels like, you know, that was not such a big deal, but this person responded in such a way like it was, right, it was a 10, it was on fire,
yeah,
right? Or they didn't respond at all, and it was interpreted differently. So really understanding now in that self-management, where does my belief and these emotions come from? And then when they're triggered, being able to identify when they're being triggered, to put that gap in between, put that pause in between. So you have that stimulus, you have that pause, you have that response. Sometimes we just go stimulus, response. And so it's like building that gap and widening that gap in the self-management process so that you can actually think and reflect about, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Okay, your computer just froze up. You got 2 minutes before you get on a call with a big important client. Oh my God, are you gonna be like, you know, like what? What am I gonna do? How am I gonna respond to this? Right? How can we widen that gap?
Is it being more aware of yourself so that you can better manage your responses and your environment then?
Yeah, you're better managing your responses, better managing your perceptions, because your perceptions of people and your perceptions of whether they're good or bad or inferior, superior, professional. I talked about this with my son yesterday, actually, because he decided to blow his hair out. And he said, I'm going to go to school. And I said, I love it. I said, now the old mom, I would have been like, boy, you can't put your hair like that. You want to make me look bad? It's about me. It's about you going out there to school, make me look bad. Like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not parenting properly. But when you get to that point of awareness, it's also how you manage your perception of others. And it gives you an opportunity now to allow others to express themselves. So you're not being hung up or stuck on, it has to be this way. This is the only way, where you have that fixed mindset, that rigid thinking. It allows us to connect deeper, to be more vulnerable, to have more compassion and understanding, because we now understand ourselves. We just can't give what we don't have.
That feels like a life journey process, right? It doesn't feel like the kind of thing you wake up one morning like, yeah, that's it. I'm emotionally intelligent in that side of my life.
No, it's not something that you can just have overnight. It's a constant evolution. And that's why when I hear people say, well, give me two tips to be emotionally intelligent, I'm like, right. Man, good luck. Good luck. Because that's just like ticking off the box, you know, ticking off the box with certain trainings to say you did it. It really is a lifelong process. It's the combination of understanding how we are as humans, you know, the psychology piece. It's the sociology piece, how we form tribes and bonds and similarities, and we're searching and looking for what do we have in common, you know, as human beings. That's that sociology piece of being the mirror and the reflection of others. We look for who we can see and say, okay, it's possible because I could see this person. We're looking for somebody to mirror, and then we're looking into the window of somebody else's life to say, okay, well, you don't look like me. I don't know what's going on, but I could look and get some insight. I can look through the window and get some insight into your lived experience. So that sociology aspect of the mirrors and windows is also a part of the emotional intelligence journey. Then you get into your relationship management skills. Okay, so what are you going to do with that information? You know, that information isn't there just to be there. It's there because as human beings, we're not islands. We are built for community. So how do we have deeper connections? How do we facilitate more belonging within ourselves and with others? And then those social skills. So you're being aware of, this is where the public speaking stuff comes in. You know, that body language, the external visible behaviors that we can see that now goes back to influencing that self-perception and self-management process, right? So it is a journey. Everybody has emotional intelligence. We are stronger in some areas. Some people have that social skills finesse and, you know, just really being able to connect with others. But they may struggle in the self-awareness part. Or even in the self-awareness part, they may be very strong decision makers, very, very strong decision makers, but they may be poor in their self-care habits. All of that is self-awareness.
So I actually get now why you say it's not a question of, hey, here are my five tips, you know, to become better. But where should somebody, if you were to say, but start here, right? Where would you say somebody who says, I think there's something going on, I think emotional intelligence in some way is what I have to start kind of raise, where should they start?
Okay, so first with language, I would say stop saying I need to start with emotional intelligence and get granular because it's so big, it's so broad, it really doesn't give you an impetus on where do I want to develop or where do I want to grow in. So that's the first thing. The language is so important because once you get that piece more clear, now you have a clearer path to actually take. Mm-hmm. So if you say, you know what, I really want to get better at decision making decisions. I procrastinate a lot. You know, you want to think about, okay, really reflecting on the times where you did make decisions. What were those conditions? Maybe you're not making that decision because you feel like you don't have enough information or you feel afraid or whatever that part is. So the key in answering your question about where do we start with reflection. We cannot embrace the present or the future without examining the past. So if you don't understand your patterns or your understanding of historically how you show up, how you make decisions, how you engage with others, the impact of that, really sitting in that reflection moment, that's where you start, because that's where you now develop a deeper understanding of yourself and the people around you. Then once you start in that reflection, you may not be able to have an honest assessment of yourself, because some studies have shown where you rate yourself and you say, you know, I feel like I'm very self-aware. 9 times out of 10, you know, that's an indication that there's so much more for us to do. And it's not a bad thing. It's just an ongoing evolution. The same way that we eat daily for food, our emotions are like food. So we have to nourish them. We have to pay attention to them. We can't stuff them down. We can't, you know, put them to the side, because if you ignore them, they will chase you. They will chase you and you have to address it. So start with the reflection. Get into a community. Look at people. Okay. Yeah. Look at people who you feel demonstrate aspects of self-awareness or self-management or really good nurturing relationships. Look at those elements and find people who you feel are demonstrating and modeling these skills, and study them, you know, study them, become that window. Look into the window of their lives and now start to form sort of like your own curriculum for that skill.
Got you. Okay. So that fits actually, because so some of my clients, for instance, struggle. One of the struggles they have is, you know, I have team members, and as much as I try to be patient with them, I just get frustrated when I can see that they're doing it wrong or they don't get it. And I can't control myself to be more understanding or more empathetic in my responses. You know, how do I approach that? So again, I assume a big part of that would be, again, doing the self-reflection. But are there any other things that people who are in that kind of mode should be thinking about?
Yeah, and it sounds similar to some of the clients that I work with too. You know, it's like, you know, it's helping them to really, I'm going to say, focus on their audience. This is the speaking part, right? A lot of that time, and you'd listen to the language, I can't control myself. I get so frustrated. I can see that they are doing so much better. We're focusing a lot on us as leaders, as opposed to what does this person need from me in this moment? Right? What do they need from me in this moment? So helping that leader, because they have so much responsibility and they have so many things going on and their lives are busy, helping them to slow it down and really unpack that decision or unpack the conditions around those decisions, it's going to help them to now channel that sense of calm or remove a little bit of that frustration from that interaction. And then supporting them with scripted language. A lot of times it's not even, the struggle is around, what do I say, right? What do I say? What words do I use? You know, so giving them language, have you considered the outcome of X? I say, if you are in a situation and you want to challenge something, there's a way to challenge it in a meeting. And you can often use "have you considered" as a phrase to point out that you don't really agree with that point that's being made, but now you are not focusing on that individual or what they have said. You're just pointing out the gap in that thought process, in that decision. So let's just say, for example, Kola, we are at work and we have to pick a vendor. I don't know. We have to pick a vendor for the intranet or whatever. I'm trying to make up something here. We have to pick a vendor, and you know, your leader has decided that this vendor is the best vendor because they have worked with them for a long period of time, and you know, they have a good relationship. But you already know that choosing this vendor, it's not going to allow, let's just say, single sign-on to work with, say Zoom or some other external features. So you don't say, I don't think that's a good vendor. You know, that vendor is not going to work, or, you know, so what if they've been with us for a long time? You know, you don't use those phrases, but have you considered what will happen when single sign-on with the third party doesn't work? No, I haven't considered. Well, maybe we could try something else. So now you're challenging that point. You're not challenging the individual. You're challenging the point, but you're challenging the point in a constructive way.
Yeah. And it's putting the problem outside of the personalities, right? And allowing the two of us to look at the issue as opposed to look at each other. And then you look at fault from each other.
Yeah. And it's different as opposed to what are you going to do when the single sign-on doesn't work? Okay, what are you going to do when the single sign-on doesn't work is different from have you considered what we're going to do when this doesn't work, right? It's two different phrasing, two different outcomes.
Mm. You work with a lot of female leaders from what I could see, and you talk about helping them go from good to great. What are the kind of the challenges that you've seen that are kind of specific for women leaders that made you want to really go all in that kind of that field?
Okay, so I work with both men and women, but
yeah, I know, but I've seen you talk in particular about your passion for that.
I am, but I wasn't always passionate because I had a block. I was like, no, I'm not working with no women. One of my coaches told me that's what I should have done. I was like, no, I'm not working with women. But I will say this, the challenges are pretty much similar, really. Similar in terms of confidence building, presentation skills, wanting to make sure that the message that they intend to deliver is actually delivered. Big one is balance, really. I mean, and I know balance is a myth, but making time for self-care, making time for their family and themselves. Perfectionism is a big one. Comes up a lot, you know, really wanting to do more, overworking because you feel as though the weight of everything and everyone is on your shoulders. So those are some of the common challenges, I would say, the leaders that I work with would have.
I find that's often related to imposter syndrome as well, where you start to then doubt yourself, or, you know, doubt that you deserve to be there, or think you're going to be found out by others. And from everything you say, I'm realizing that it really starts, a lot of self-reflection will help you just address some of these things as well.
Yeah. And, you know, with imposter syndrome, I mean, who hasn't had that?
Right.
Somebody who doesn't have imposter syndrome is just in denial because, again, now we're going back to the psychology of our bodies, our brains, and our emotions. So I think if we can ask scientific questions around that and understand that in the same way that we have to go to the restroom, we're not going to fight going to the restroom. So imposter syndrome feelings, they come from somewhere, but we tend to always want to fight. We got to fight imposter. We got to crush imposter syndrome. We got to break it once and for all. All of these fighting languages that is just pushing your emotion, which is just feedback. Emotions are feedback, they're data. It's pushing these emotions someplace where they don't have a space to actually grow. If you got to use the bathroom, your body naturally functions that way. You're not going to be like, I'm not going to go to the bathroom for 2 days, 10 days, 8 days. You know what's going to happen? You're going to get backed up, clogged up, can have all kind of problems. So
although my son does that once in a while. It's like, no, I don't need it. It's like, come on, man.
Eventually you're going to go one way or the other. But the thing with the emotions is that it's not as quick. You don't see what happens when you stuff those down or don't address or try to fight, quote unquote, fight this thing. You're going to feel confident in some areas and you're going to feel uncomfortable in other areas. So sitting into it, exploring it, putting that on the table. Okay. I'm not my emotion because emotions are fickle. I'm not this situation. I'm not this emotion. So let's explore why this is coming up for me. Right. And how can I now build an environment where the emotions that I do want to have, that I do want to feel, how can I now create some system or some mechanism to get me back to that?
Okay. Listen, final question is kind of a two-part or a balanced question on this question, on this topic, which is, what does life look like when you're, I know the terminology is clumsy, right? So forgive me for it, but what does life look like when you just have no emotional intelligence? I know that's not right, but just bear with me, right? And what does life look like when you really are kind of have mastered your emotions and are able to use them kind of purposefully in that way?
Okay, so man, there's so many angles to peek.
I know.
I'm like, okay, let me see. How do I support you in this, Kola? So what does life look like when we're struggling with social skills, for example? Mm-hmm. What does life look mm-hmm. like? If we're struggling with social skills to build relationships, we may feel nobody understands us. We may feel lonely. We may feel like we can't fit in anywhere. So our relationships with professional people, with personal people, family members, they are strained. That's what it looks like when we're struggling in the social skills area. We may say things that we don't intend to create division or intend to create harm or drive people away, but that's what tends to happen when we are struggling in that area. When we're struggling in that relationship management piece, we're not picking up cues. We're not listening and actually being present. So we might be misjudging or misreading a lot of situations. We will always misread some situations, but we're doing it, it's constant. It's a constant misreading or misjudging of situations. So we're not really paying attention to what's being said or what's being done. Mm. And our previous encounters are clouding it. They're clouding the ability to make those accurate assessments. What does like look like when we're struggling or we need to develop more self-management skills? It can be on either spectrum. Maybe you are endlessly procrastinating. You're not accomplishing your goals. You're not accomplishing things that you actually set out to accomplish. Maybe you're not in that place of self-care where you're setting healthy boundaries. Maybe you're underpricing. Maybe you're not following up on things that you want to do for your business because there's something internally that is blocking you or hindering you from that, and you're afraid of that. There's so many aspects of it in terms of what life could look like if we are needing to strengthen making decisions or connecting with others. What does life look like when we don't have self-awareness, where we're just repeating the same challenges? We may be moving from job to job to job, and we see the same problem happening over and over. We're not really aware of how we're contributing to the success or the challenges that we're facing in our life, right? So I think people tend to focus on emotional intelligence when they feel like something's wrong. Like they need right. emotional intelligence. It's not synonymous with something that okay, they need it because it's wrong. Like something's wrong, so they really need some emotional intelligence. We're not looking at the overall picture of the different components, and there's so many of them. A healthy regard for themselves is one aspect of that self-awareness. So what that looks like is you're using self-deprecating language. Oh, I'm so stupid. I could never get it right. Oh, me? You know, you look past yourself in the mirror and you always have something negative to say. You know, you don't need anybody else to be negative to you because you the number one negative you do, critic. So right. That is one aspect of what life could look like if we need to strengthen a positive, healthy regard for ourselves. When it's
the flip
thriving,
side, yeah.
When it's thriving, those different areas, those components, I don't want to say we're striving for like some sort of imaginary perfection, but the purpose of it is that we're building relationship with ourselves and we're building relationship with others so that we can assess and say, okay, I'm at a place where I truly feel joy. I'm at a place where I have connected relationships. For me, at the end of the day, this is all about being able to have connected relationships. A lot of the studies have shown that when you take a baby and you separate them and you isolate them, you know, it impacts our nervous system. It impacts our health. We've gone through a lot of coaching practices and tools where people have gone to seminars and retreats and released so much emotional pain and hurt that now they're off diabetes medication. Oh, wow. They're off cholesterol medication because these emotions carry so much power in our bodies. So what it looks like on the flip side is that you're in that space of where you are reflecting. You're in that space where you're setting healthy boundaries for yourself. You're not drowning in overwhelm or guilt, self-criticism. You're in that space where you can actively say, you know what, I made a mistake. I'm not allowing my fear of embarrassment or rejection to lead in this conversation or lead in this moment. You are embracing difficult conversations. You're actually setting aside time. This is something that people talk about, but they don't really do. You're setting aside time to embrace those difficult conversations, the ones that you know you need to have, but you haven't had it yet, and you're going to wait until next week or the week after, and it never happens. So when we are strong in these areas of social awareness, social skills, relationship management, we're not avoiding the performance review conversation because we feel like, well, I don't want to deal with the rejection that my employee is going to give me or the pushback my employee is going to give to me. We're not avoiding firing that person because, you know, we don't want any backlash. We're leaning in and setting aside time to have that conversation with the sibling who you know you need to have that conversation, or your parent to say, you know what, this is where I am as an adult. This is what I'm experiencing from you as an adult. We're not shying away from honest conversations that facilitate a deeper connection, because you're not just going to have a conversation for conversation's sake. There's a purpose for the conversation. Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, it's a more fulfilled and joyful life, it sounds, but obviously a long journey for many to get there. Monique, I know that this could go on for hours and hours because I can feel and sense the wealth of kind of knowledge that you have and experience that you have in this topic. If you're listening to this now, probably this tells you that I don't know enough about this subject, so you need to listen to Monique. Scroll down, go onto the links. I've put them all in the show notes, and go on and find the things that she's done, the book that you said you'd written. I hadn't seen that, actually. And all the stuff that she's done. So Monique is really brilliant at this as well. So Monique, listen, thank you so much for that. I know it says so much more we could go into, but I can't take so much more of your time, which means we have to move on to the 10 question quick fire round.
Okay.
All right. So this is just 10 random questions. There's no right or wrong answer. Be instinctive. Don't agonize about it. And it's just a little bit of fun for people to kind of, I guess, get to see a different side of you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, man.
Okay. If you could coach any person in history, dead or alive, who would that be?
Ooh. Oh, my God. Bob Marley.
Oh, nice. Okay. Love that. Okay, cool. Excellent. Question 2. On a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous do you get before a speech or presentation?
Oh, that's good. It depends. It could be a 6 or it could be an 8.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool. Question 3, love, wealth, or happiness. If you could only have one, which would it be?
That's deep. I'm having an urge to want to explain my answer.
No explanation allowed.
Wealth.
Okay, cool. Question 4, favorite book, favorite album, or favorite movie, or all three, if you know them.
So favorite book, Jack Canfield, Success Principles.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Okay, question five. If you had to relive one day for the rest of your life, like Groundhog Day, what day would that be?
There was a day we went on family vacation in Florida, and it was just an incredible day. Like it was a day filled with so many good moments, with multiple parts of our family from morning to night. And it was just great. It was just incredible.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Question six. If you could only listen, speak, or see, which would you choose?
I may say see, I think. Wait, hold on. Listen.
Listen, speak, or see?
See, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what most people have chosen. Question seven, one track, one song to walk out on stage to, what would that be?
I'm coming out. I want the world to know.
All right, sing it, girl. Okay, question eight, three words to describe yourself, or seven words of an epitaph or something, but three words or seven words.
Three words: positive, intentional, and powerful.
Nice. Okay. Question nine. What was the favorite period of your life? Education, you know, early school, that kind of time, early work life, or now?
I got to pick just one?
Yeah.
Goodness. Oh man, so close. Okay, I'll say now. Followed right, closely okay. by. I gotta explain.
All right, okay. I'll give you one explanation. Go ahead.
Followed closely by the early college career.
Okay. Yeah. That was a lot of fun actually for me too. And final question, question 10, which actor would play you in the movie of your life?
Probably Lauryn Hill.
Nice. I don't know what she's doing now, actually. Hope she's good. Lauren was one of my favorite moments in life. Was I still remember the joy I felt seeing her come on stage at Wembley Arena. I can't explain it. It was just, I felt joy well up inside me the first time I saw her on stage back in her kind of miseducation days. So, Yeah. Okay. Hey, listen, thank you for taking part in that. It was just a bit of fun for us to get to know you better. Listen, there will definitely be people, including my brother, actually, I should say, because he listened to one of our Clubhouse sessions and he said, oh, I like her. She knows her stuff. So when people want to know more about you, where should they go?
They could visit my website, clearcommunicationsolutions.com. Or they could hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm there every week, pretty much. Just make sure that you send me a connection request. Don't hit follow. Just send me a connection request and say, hey, heard you on Cola's podcast and I want to connect. So you can hit me up on my website, clearcommunicationsolutions.com. And if it's social media, LinkedIn is my social of choice. So hit me up on LinkedIn, Monique Russell, Clear Communication Coach.
Excellent. And what didn't I ask, right? What didn't I cover that really, if I was doing this properly, I should have asked you or we should have talked about?
We should have talked about my book, Intentional Motherhood. Who said it would be easy?
Do it now.
Who said it would be easy? Because it is so connected to our conversation today, Cola, because it's about the intention and the identity of motherhood. It's a role, it's a choice, but without awareness, we run the risk of repeating the same unhealthy communications patterns that we picked up from our parents, from our grandparents, and we're not blaming anybody. We're not blaming anybody for the way they raised us. They just didn't have the tools. They did what they can with the information they had. But intentional motherhood, who said it would be easy, is really about that process of rebirthing into your identity as a mother. And it's helping us to parent from love and not fear.
Love that. And we can get that online. We can order that online.
Yep. You can get it on Amazon.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Links will be in the show notes as well, guys. So make sure you scroll down for that. Monique, listen, this has been awesome, right? I mean, I do these podcasts because I want to learn a lot of stuff. And this has definitely hands down been one of the ones that I've learned the most from. So thank you for coming on my podcast. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for giving me your time. And final thing is for you to say goodbye in a language, dialect, slang, whatever it is of your choice. Over to you.
Odabo.
Odabo, yes. There we go. Because I know you're from Bahamas, but you're also from Nigeria as well, right?
Yes.
So yeah, that makes sense. All right, people, you heard it here. That was Monique. With me talking about all things related to emotional intelligence and all sorts of other stuff as well. Odabo to all of you guys. That means goodbye.